Thanks to all of you for sprinting to get here in time. If it's any consolation, I had to haul four laptops all the way down to this theater. So, this session is on VDI and remote desktop services in Windows Server 2012, and I do have some R2 stuff sprinkled in there throughout. Hopefully that's the session you came to see. If it's not the session you're here for, I mean, don't leave, because I think it's still a pretty good session, but just when you fill out the evals, the feedback form, when it says, was this session relevant to me, don't mark me down because you came to the wrong one. My name is Adam Carter. I'm the technical product manager for VDI at Microsoft. I work in the Windows Server org. I've been doing VDI for about 2 years now, since just before we kind of unveiled Windows 8. That's when I started. I came into this role after working in other groups at Microsoft, and they were like, hey, 2 weeks later is the build conference. We're announcing Windows 8 and Server 2012, so learn all your demos so you can deliver it there. So hopefully it's I've refined it a little bit since then. Grab my clicker. Blah, 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 disclaimer. Some of the stuff I'm going to show you is beta. Treat it as beta software. It might change. Pretty comfortable everything that we're doing in R2, and I do have a couple of R2 demos. I don't expect us to have to change or drop anything at this point. We're in pretty good shape. But standard disclaimer. So just out of curiosity, was anybody in the People-Centric IT Foundation session? Did anybody go to that? That was my boss's session. How did he do? It was good? Okay, well, now the pressure's on. Now I gotta step up and do as well as he did. I'm not gonna spend a whole lot of time on these slides, but just to kind of give you an idea of what we're talking about here. You guys know this, users wanna be able to do stuff, right? And users wanna be able to bring their own stuff to work. They wanna use their own phone. You know, when I worked in IT as an IT administrator before I joined Microsoft, I used to have a nickname. My users used to call me Dr. No, because that's what I really felt like my job was to do all day, was tell people no. Can I bring my own laptop to work? No. Can you open these ports in the firewall? No. My job is to keep this network safe and secure. The reality was, these users had found a way to make money for the company, and I was preventing them from doing that. I wasn't letting them do their job the way they felt they could be the most effective. So it's a challenge that we all face, and those challenges haven't gone away. There's still this, how do you balance what users want and keeping users happy with keeping your job, you know, in the event that their laptop gets lost or stolen. You don't want to end up on the front page of the news, right? That was always my goal in IT, just don't be a news story. But anyway, so we've got this mess of things, right? They've got their own devices they want to bring. You've got applications that you want to deliver to them. You've got data that, again, you don't want payroll information or social security numbers or credit card numbers or anything like that getting lost on a USB disk somewhere. So how do you manage all of that? And that's really the story behind People-Centric IT, is how do we enable users? How do we do this? How do we give them the stuff that they want but do it in a safe and secure way? How do we manage that access protection? And when we talk about VDI, VDI is one of the ways that you can enable that. I know a few people were in the People-Centric IT session, so they've seen kind of the whole story about how we use Dynamics Access Control and rights management and how we can enable and manage some of these devices and things. But we talk about VDI, it's one way to do that. How can we keep all the data and the applications in the data center? And then if users want to access their application from Starbucks or they want to work from home, how can we still give them that corporate desktop that we know is safe and secure, but keep all the data in the data center? So those are the three pillars of People-Centric IT: enabling users, unifying the environment so we don't have a dozen different management tools to use, but making sure that the data is protected and secure. So why VDI? Has anybody here already got a VDI deployment or a remote desktop deployment? Okay. You know, I always tell people if you want to do VDI, if you're doing VDI to save money, you're probably going to be disappointed. It's always going to be more expensive to buy server class hardware, you know, and storage than it is to buy PCs. So don't go into it thinking you're going to save a lot of money. Now, if your environment is a total mess and it's unmanaged and you just need to kind of greenfield start over the whole thing, there's an opportunity certainly there to start delivering a managed desktop this way. But really do it for these other things that we talked about. Do it so that users can work from anywhere. Do it so that your data stays secure. You know, I talked to a lot of finance companies, healthcare companies, Department of Defense for various countries around the world. Those guys have these specific needs. We want to keep data secure. We have privacy issues. We can't have data floating around and getting lost. So VDI is a great solution for them. We can deliver that great user experience, but we can still balance that out by keeping everything in the data center and keeping it secure. VDI, I mean, that's the whole idea. When I talk about VDI, I should preface it by saying VDI is an umbrella term that includes both virtual desktops, virtual machine-based client operating systems sitting on Hyper-V in the data center, and also remote desktop sessions. You guys know remote desktop sessions? We used to call it terminal services, but then everybody figured out what terminal server meant, so we changed the name. Got to keep you guys on your toes. So when I talk about VDI, I'm really talking about all three flavors, remote desktop sessions, and then pooled and personal VMs. When we talk about personal VMs, that's really a one-to-one mapping of a user to a virtual machine. It's the analog of taking that physical PC, putting it in a virtual machine, putting it in the data center. Every time a user connects, they go back to their same machine. They install software, they change the background wallpaper. Next time they connect, that's all there. It's their machine. It's just sitting in the data center now, and they're accessing it remotely. When we talk about pooled desktops, I describe pooled desktops as the, I use the hotel analogy for that. When I go to a hotel, they've got hundreds of identical rooms. I go to the front desk, they give me a key, they put me in a room for however long my stay is. It doesn't really matter what I do in that room, right? If I move the bed and put it under the window, or I change the bedspread or something like that, when I check out of the hotel, what happens? They reset everything back to the way it was before I got there. Pooled VMs is the same type of a scenario. We have our gold image, we have our standard desktop. When a user logs in, the broker routes them to whichever one of those virtual machines is available. When they log out, we revert that machine back to that gold image. Doesn't matter what they do it with it, we're going to blow it away and reset it back to that gold image standard again. Next question people have is, well, which one should I choose? How do I decide which one to use? And this is one way you can help decide. This is some of the things to think about. If you look at personalization, app compat, ease of management, and cost effectiveness, if you use those as your vectors and kind of figure out, you know, which ones of those are important to you, which solution is right. If we take personalization, We look at personalization with sessions, again, that's we're giving them a server desktop. We've got one operating system install, and it's a multiple user server installation. It's kind of like mainframe days, hence the term terminal services, because it was basically a dumb terminal. Everybody's connected to that same one. None of those, we're not going to make anybody an administrator, because making users an administrator on a server is a bad idea. So the personalization that's available to them is limited. They can't install their own apps or anything like that. Pooled VMs are similar. Again, because when the user logs out, we're going to discard that session and reset it. There's really no personalization they can do, because we're just going to blow it away when they leave. Now, we do have some features in the VDI solution from Microsoft to kind of work around that. We do have some ways to enable some of that personalization. But if you really want to give users full control, you know, personal VMs give you the best levels of personalization because it's their machine. If you want to enable them as administrators on those machines, you can do that. If we look at application compatibility, because Sessions is running on the server, there are some applications that just won't install on a server operating system. The Zune software is the one I always use as an example, but nobody even installs that anymore because they don't have Zunes. But the Zune software is one that when you go to install it, it does a check and say, hey, I'm not compatible with this operating system. So you do have some applications that just don't run on a server, or they're assuming, you know, that they can have direct access to the video card, and you can't really do that normally on a server. So you have some application compatibility potentially with Sessions. I would say it's better, and it gets better with every release of the product, but if you want full application compatibility, run it in a virtual machine, run a client operating system, put Windows 7, Windows 8 in that VM, you know, and apps should just work. When you look at ease of management, with personal VMs, hey, it's really just a physical machine that you've moved into the data center. You still have to patch it. You still have to update the antivirus signatures on there. Everything you had to do when it was a physical machine, you still have to do. You still have all that management overhead because you've got multiple machines. Plus, you've got to figure out how you're going to do the storage. What does your storage look like for, you know, 20 gigabytes, 40 gigabytes, 60 gigabytes per user for that machine that's theirs? Pooled VMs are much easier because we move the management to just that master image. When it's time to apply a service pack, we take our master image, we apply it there, and it gets propagated out to that pool for us. So we just have to do one update, and it updates every machine in the pool instead of having to do that individual management for each machine. And then sessions is easier again because it's just you're doing any management is right there at the server level. You just patch that once and it's patched. There's no propagating the patch everywhere. And as a result, really, of those management overhead and some of the storage challenges around VDI, the cost effectiveness maps pretty closely to the same way. Remote desktop sessions are going to be the cheapest. They're the cheapest to license. You get the best density in terms of number of users per server. And then you don't have all the weird VDA licensing that you have with client VMs. So it tends to be the most cost-effective solution. We find that when customers set out to do VDI, 70 to 80% of those customers actually end up deploying desktop sessions because they get all that cost effectiveness and they can still deliver a good user experience to the user. In terms of the Microsoft solution, we manage them all the same way. It doesn't matter which of the three you choose, it's the same management console that you use. So, and you can certainly mix and match. When I jump into demo here in a little bit, I've actually got all three running on one laptop here up on stage. So I can deliver sessions, pool desktops, personal VMs, all from the same machine, all from the same management console. So when we talk about what we did in Server 2012 for VDI, it was a really big investment area for us. We really wanted to make this a better experience. When we talk about, when I look at the improvements that we made, I basically put them into these three buckets. Efficient management. How do we make it easier? How do we get rid of five different MMC consoles, and how do we make that whole deployment process easier? Best value for VDI. So what can we do? Things like pooled VMs are a more cost-effective solution, but I still want to be able to give users some personalization. So how can we do that? How can you mitigate that for me? How can we make sure that we can really get good density in terms of number of users per server? What can we do to make sure every user has a good experience? And flexible storage options. The nice thing about our VDI solution, having it built on top of Hyper-V, all the great storage improvements and storage scenarios that Hyper-V supports, we get to bring along for free. So if you've already got a SAN, yeah, we can leverage a SAN for that storage. If you don't have a SAN or you don't want to add to your SAN, put local disks in your machine. Just put a bunch of cheap solid-state disks in your server and use that to host this as your storage. Or set up a scale-out file cluster, file share on Windows Server 2012. Host all your VMs on that file share. Thing is, we give you the choice. Whichever makes sense for you based on your infrastructure and your design requirements, you can do. There's not a dependency on, well, if you're going to do 5,000 machines, you have to have a SAN. In fact, there is a session tomorrow, Ara Bernardi, one of my colleagues, is doing on scale out for VDI. And he goes through this. He talks about how they designed and tested a 2,000 seat VDI deployment using SMB file share to host all the virtual machines. And then the final place, and one of the key ones for the improvements we made, is in the user experience. If users decide the system is slow, if users don't think the system works, they're not going to use it, right? You're going to have a solution that nobody wants. So we made huge investments in making the user experience as high fidelity and as close to a local experience as we could. People always said the RDP protocol was great for WAN, they always said it was great for LAN, but if we didn't have a great WAN experience, I'll talk to you about some of the improvements we've made there. Support for a GPU. If you've got applications that require it, we can do that. We can give you accelerated graphics. USB redirections. So if a user is sitting at home, they want to print to their local USB printer, you can do that from a remote desktop session. Any USB device that they want to plug in. They want to plug in a camera. They want to plug in a thumb drive. Now, you as administrators have the ability to enforce policy on that if you don't want people to put thumb drives in, because your whole idea for doing VDI is to keep the data in the data center. You can control that, but it's all there if you want to enable it. And just a seamless experience, making it feel as much like a local session as we can in a remote session. Okay, so let's talk a little bit more about efficient management and how we got there. Did anybody, I'm curious, anybody done a VDI deployment on Server 2008 R2? I usually get one or two hands up that I have to apologize to, I'm sorry. So for those of you that didn't do VDI, and I'm talking about just a native Microsoft solution, not Zen Desktop or something on top of VDI, we actually supported it. We had this connector for VMM that connected to the broker that was in 2008 RDS, and we had a quick start guide, that was 100 pages long. And if you followed that guide and you spent about a week, you could, at the end of the week, have a VM pool up and running with some VMs that people could connect to. In Server 2012, that 100-page quick start guide has literally been reduced to 6 clicks. 6 clicks, go get a cup of coffee. When you come back, your VDI pool is up and running and ready for you. Unified administration, again, used to be like 5 or 6 different MMC consoles you had to flip back and forth between in order to manage a remote desktop solution. Server 2012, it's one console, and it's built into Server Manager. So it's all in one place. And again, the installation wizard, making it just easy to get up and running. All the manual configuration of the web access and the gateway and the broker and connecting everything together and getting your farm of machines all built out, taken care of for you. It's all automated now. Okay, I always get ahead of my slides. I get so excited and I talk and I get to a slide and I've already covered it. I see a hand up. I guess, do you have a question? Yeah, so the repeat the question was, hey, you have session shadowing on this slide. Thanks for catching that. So in Server 2012, hey, we released this great product that was missing one key feature, and that was if I was a help desk person and a user called and I wanted to be able to see what they were seeing, there was no way to do it. We ran out of time. We had to ship a product at some point. So session shadowing got cut from Server 2012. And it's been a pain point for customers. We have customers that have said, we never would have deployed had we known we weren't going to have session shadowing. And we had workarounds. We'd say use remote assistance and things. But anyway, I apologize too much. It's fixed in R2. Session shadowing is back in R2. I feel like that would get applause if people had deployed 2012. And some of this stuff we talked about already. Did I click back? Where? I don't even know what slide I'm on anymore. I'll walk you through some of the wizard deployment and show you what some of the deployment scenarios look like, how easily we can create a VM pool and manage it. One console, if you're publishing applications or you're publishing desktops to your users, again, it's all done from one place, all very easy to do. And everything that I do through the GUI is also available through PowerShell. So if you want to build some automation, you want to just not have to go into the GUI all the time, everything is available in PowerShell. There's a whole commandlet set. So you can do all kinds of crazy scale, multiple thousands of machine type of deployments and just automate with PowerShell in order to do that. So a couple things around virtual machines. One of the things we talked about was this, if you're going to do personal VMs, you still have to patch them all individually. And if you think about having 100 or 200 virtual machines running on a single server, Tuesday at 2 a.m. when the patches deploy, you're going to bring that server to its knees. That patching and rebooting process creates tremendous I.O. You've got all kinds of disk activity. You've got all kinds of CPU activity. To kind of give you an idea, when a machine is just working, like kind of a standard worker doing stuff in Office or whatever, the disk IOPS is around 10 IOPS, maybe 17 IOPS, IOs per second. When you reboot, the reboot and the login process is about 200 IOPS per second. So Tuesday at 2 a.m., for example, or whenever your patches roll out, you're creating tremendous IO load on the machine. So one of the things that we do to kind of mitigate that is automatically we'll spread that patch window out. So instead of everybody kicking off their patching at 2 a.m., there's an algorithm that kind of randomly staggers that a little bit. So we spread that out over time. Same with the process of updating your master image. So we've got a VM pool and we updated our master because there was a new service pack or some other patches we needed to put in there. Again, instead of killing the server all at once while it recreates all the VMs in the pool, we spread that out over time and we give you some control over that. Do you want to log everybody off and update it right away? Do you want to spread that out? We give you that. Okay, let me show you some demo. I don't know about you guys. You're going to see plenty of slides this week. So let me switch over and let's just do some demo and show you what some of this looks like. Okay. So the first thing I want to do is walk through. It's like, okay, it used to be 100 pages. Now you say it's 6 clicks. First thing I want to do is walk through that deployment wizard. This is a brand new server. As you can see, there's nothing installed on it. I don't have Hyper-V or anything showing up over here. but I want to show you with that initial how easy it is to get, for example, a VDI pilot up and running or a proof of concept. Here's the new server manager in 2012. I just go to add new roles and features. The first thing it says is, okay, do you want to do role-based or feature-based installation, or do you want to do a remote desktop services installation? Role-based and feature-based installation, that's that same checklist that you're used to seeing. It shows you a list of everything you can install, and you put checkboxes next to the ones you want. If I choose remote desktop services installation, it's going to automate all that process for me and do all the configuration for me. It's just going to ask me a couple of questions. So the first thing it asks is, do you want to do a standard deployment or a quick start? Really, the difference is, if I'm doing a large multi-server deployment, so I've got my web gateway maybe running on one machine, and I've got my broker running on another machine, and I've got two or three machines running Hyper-V that I'm going to use to host my virtual machine collections, standard deployment lets me pick all that, lets me pick which machines I want which roles installed on. If I do a quick start, it reduces all those questions and just creates a desktop pool on one machine. Just going to install and configure all the services on one machine. I used to call that VDI in a box, but there is a trademark on that term from another company, so we'll just call it, I don't know, VDI all in one place on one machine. Okay, next question it asks, you want to do a virtual machine deployment or do you want to do session-based? Really, the only difference between these two wizards is when I click virtual machine deployment, it's going to say, okay, where's that gold image? Where's that machine you want to use as your gold image? If I do session-based, I'm pretty much done at this point. But we'll do virtual machine-based. Now it's asking me which machine I want to do this deployment on, and in this case, it's just the same local machine that we're using. I could deploy this remotely. I could point it to another machine that's in my pool of available servers. So right now it's doing an inspection of the machine and trying to figure out what it needs to do to that machine. Is Hyper-V already installed? Is IIS already installed so I can put the web gateway on it? What other configuration do I need to do on that machine? Okay, it passed. It says, yep, the machine looks good. Now I just need that gold image. Where's that gold image you want to use for the collection? And as it turns out, I have one right here I've created. Now all you have to do, create a virtual machine running Windows 7 or Windows 8, put all your applications in it, get it configured as your corporate desktop, and then sysprep it and shut it off. That's all you need. That's what you need to do to create the gold image. It doesn't need to be a sysprepped image. So I'll select that, click Next. Now at this point, we're done. I check the box to say restart, because the server will need to be restarted once because it's going to install Hyper-V on it. And then when I click Deploy, I'm just done. I come back in 20 minutes and I'll have a VM collection created for me. Let me show you what one looks like. Rather than wait that 20 minutes, here's one I baked earlier today. Okay. You can see a couple of changes here on this machine. This is identical hardware, but Hyper-V is now installed. Remote desktop services. I've got an icon here for that. When I click on that, it's going to show me. Let me restart Server Manager. There's a race condition that happens when my domain controller wasn't up before my remote desktop server was, so I couldn't see. Now I should see everything. There we go. Oh, this doesn't look good. I've never seen it do that before. Am I on the right server? Well, I have a different one I can show. This might mean the rest of my demos don't work. All right, this is another machine. This one's less interesting because it doesn't have as many collections created on it. But you can see here, it's given me a summary. Here are all the roles and which machines that they're installed on. It's very easy from here. If I want to build out this pool, I want to add additional remote desktop session host servers. I want to kind of create a farm of session servers. It's very easy here. I just say add session host server. It asks me for the machine name. Puts the machine there. Same with any of these. I want to make a farm for web access. Very easy to add that in there. A couple of the things I can see here from this collection, it goes ahead and automatically creates the collection for me. It'll automatically publish some applications. If I don't want to give people a whole, if I don't want to deliver individual applications, if I want to provide a desktop, I can do that from here too. But I really want to know why this didn't show up. I'm going to give it one more try. Because I want to show all the other VM management, all the other collection management that I can do. What's that? No, that's a RAS thing. That's different. I'm not even, yeah, that was a different thing. God, that is so weird. Wow. Oh, there they come in. Okay. I just wasn't being patient enough. So this machine is set up a little bit differently. In addition to, I've actually got everything deployed here. I've got, in addition to a VM pool, I've also got a collection of personal VMs, and then I've got sessions running here as well. And we can take a look and see a few things. We start with the personal desktop. A couple of things here. You can see it created, I've got a pool created with two machines in it. It's very easy. If I want to grow that out, I want to add some more, I want to add more virtual machines. I just say add virtual machine and tell it how many more to create. And based on the original gold image I used for that personal VM, it'll create that many more additional child VMs. From here, I can also, you can see this first one has already been assigned to the administrator. If I want to assign this one to a specific user, I can. If I don't do any assignments, as users log in, they'll automatically just get assigned the next one that's available. I do have the ability here to publish applications, so if I don't want to deliver full desktops, but applications, maybe it's an application that doesn't run on a terminal server, but I still want to kind of put it in a pool, I can actually publish applications from a VM collection as well. A couple other things we can look at here. This is my VM pool, so you can see there's a couple of machines in the pool. Same thing, if I want to add machines to it, I can. If I want to change the users that have access to it, it's all done by Active Directory groups, so I can create groups that are allowed to see this VM. I can do some of the basic policy stuff here. Do I want to allow audio and video? Do I want to allow USB redirection? Do I want to allow access to local drives? I can check a lot of that here. And the other thing I can do with this VM pool is I can do that gold image maintenance. So it's time to roll out a new gold image. I make the updates to my gold image and just come down here and tell it I want to recreate all my desktops. And it's going to say, okay, which one of these is the new gold image? I pick the machine that is my new gold image that's got the changes in it. And then it comes up and says, okay, how do you want to make these changes? How do you want to put them in place? Do you want to just start now and as users log off, I'll update that machine in the pool and the next time a user logs in, they'll get the new machine? Do I want to put it on a schedule and say, hey, by midnight tonight, log everybody off, update everything to the new base image, and so tomorrow when users log in, they'll get the new one? Or I can hit the big red button and say recreate all desktops right now and log off users. So I have some flexibility there in how I go about doing that image maintenance. One of the other things that we can do, so we talked about with pooled desktops, we lose that user state. We don't save any of the user information, which isn't a great experience for users. You know, we always talk about Sally in accounting who wants her kitty cat wallpaper. How can we still enable that for her? So we have this concept with a collection of what we call a user profile disk. The idea of a user profile disk, and I've just enabled it there, all I have to do is create a share and it'll automatically set all the permissions on there. But what we do is we take that /users/username directory. And for each user, we're going to store that in a separate VHD file. When a user logs onto a machine in the pool, we're going to automatically mount that personal virtual machine, not even a virtual machine, it's just a personal, it's just a VHD file. We're going to mount that as that /users directory. So what that means is if they save files to the My Documents directory, if they add internet favorites, if they save their background wallpaper, change their background wallpaper, when they log out, we're going to discard that session. We're going to reset it back to the gold image like we always do. But all of that user personalization was stored in a separate VHD file. And the next time they log onto the pool, we're just going to mount that into the next machine they log in. So users get some personalization. Now you can take the benefits of easier management of a pool desktop, but still give users that personalization. Question? How does that work with folder redirection? Let me get into that. I've got some slides that kind of talk about that. You can work in conjunction with folder redirection and things like that. We'll take one more question. Applications that are installed in that place? Applications aren't, we're really just capturing the user's home directories. Yeah, Google, and it's not technically supported. In theory, if all of the program files and registry keys are all user keys and files, it would probably work, but there be dragons. You're off on your own at that point. All right, anything else? Oh, I can show you kind of what the user experience looks like now that we've deployed this. Just to give you a quick idea. Here's my server. So I'm just going to log in with a user here. So let's do a user login. This is the web access console. Again, it was automatically configured for us. IIS was installed. This was configured. And you can see all the things that I published for this user. In some cases, we published just individual applications. I'll go ahead and launch Excel here. So what's actually happening is it's starting a remote desktop session on the server, but just publishing just the application, not the whole desktop. But it's Excel. You know, one of the nice things in with the remote desktop experience, and I'm kind of jumping ahead into the user experience, is we're all touch-enabled here, and Office happens to be touch-enabled, so I can pinch and zoom and all those things, even in the remote session, just like I could with the local session. Now, we are limited to 10 points of touch, because that's the most fingers any of our testers had. But you can see there's a... here's a user session. We can go ahead and launch a pool desktop as well. So this web console, and I don't want to confuse people. People are like, hey, wow, it's all browser-based, so now I can run it from my Mac or anything else. I want to be clear. What's happening is when I click on those icons, it's downloading an RDP file. So you do need to have an RDP client already on the machine. There are lots of those out there. People always ask me, you know, so does this work for my iPad? There, if you go to the Apple Store or the Android Play, Google Play, Android Store, and search for RDP, there are plenty of third-party clients out there for remote desktop. And a lot of them support these things. They support the same web access. The web access page is actually created from an XML feed. You can subscribe right to that feed in those things and just get the icons within the app. This is a remote desktop session. Sorry, this isn't a remote desktop session. This is a Windows 8 VM pool. You can tell I don't reset my demos very well, but the idea is we can create some files here. New text file. The idea is I can create a new text file here, and if I go ahead and log out now, and if I switch over really quickly to my server, will I get there in time, and bring up Hyper-V Manager, I'm not going to get there. But what I was going to show, if I look at Hyper-V Manager and scroll down here to where these pooled VMs are, so you can see that this one is restarting. It's because that when I logged out of the session, Hyper-V took that, shut down the session, discarded it, rolled back to a snapshot, and is starting it up again. So normally those user changes I made would have been lost when we rolled back that snapshot. But when I log back in here, may not even be the, probably won't even connect me to the same machine because that machine is still booting. But you'll see when this one comes up, I should still have that new text file we created should still be on the desktop because that's being stored in a separate file, totally transparent to the user. If I go in here to the C drive, you know, I look in the user's directory, you know, I look in the desktop or look in the My Documents directory, it all looks like local files to me. I treat it like local files. It's kind of funny. This actually fixes an incompatibility with PST files in Outlook. We don't officially support PST files on a network share. At least we didn't used to. But when you use personal user profile disk, it looks like it's sitting on local storage, so it works. Okay. We'll spend more time on the UI and talk about some of this stuff in a little bit more detail in just a bit. Let me switch back to the demo. But the idea there was just to show how much easier we've made it to get VDI up and running. I really have done no additional configuration on these. In fact, you missed when you first go to the web access portal, it actually prompts you that there's no certificate installed on these demo machines because I haven't put HTTPS certificates on there because I haven't done any other configuration. But it's very easy to get it up and running. Okay, so you talked about efficient management, Adam. Now tell us about low cost. Why should I choose the Microsoft solution? There's a couple reasons why. We really feel like we bring you the best value for VDI. One of those is user profile disk, because now we get the management benefits of a pooled desktop, but we can still give users that personalization that they want so it feels like their own desktop. We also have a feature called Fair Share that sort of enables, that what we don't want is one user starting something really intense like a file copy or compiling software or something that's really CPU intensive or disk intensive. We don't want somebody to do that to affect the experience for everybody else on that same shared server. So Fair Share does some kind of dynamic throttling to make sure that everybody has a good experience. And then multiple storage options. We can really drive the cost of VDI down by taking advantage of some of the new Hyper-V storage opportunities. Okay, user profile disk. You saw how it worked. It works for both VDI pools and sessions, but they are separate. And I want to make this, because a lot of people are like, hey, this is the answer to my Roman user profile question, because it's not really. User profile disk really just works within a virtual machine collection or a session collection. So if I also roam to sometimes physical machines, that user profile disk doesn't roam with me. But it does work in conjunction with roaming user profiles and folder redirection. So if I have users that are on physical machines and I also want them to roam to VDI, the features work and you can use the features together. In terms and just to be clear, this is yet another way to solve that roaming user profile problem. Roaming user profiles still work, folder redirection still works, UEV, you guys familiar with user experience virtualization? It's part of MDOP. It's just another application that or another agent you can install that allows you to kind of control what gets roamed for users. All of those work. You can use folder redirection or UEV with VDI, or you can just use user profile disk if that's the only place you care about the personalization. Did that answer your question, guy who had a question about that before? Okay, maybe he left. I don't know. Okay, so Fair Share, Server 2008 R2 sessions did Fair Share just for the CPU. So if a user started something really CPU intensive, we would kind of just throttle that and still make sure that the other users were getting CPU that they wanted. We've extended that in Server 2012 to also do bandwidth and disk I/O. So if somebody starts doing a huge download over the network, which is going to create both bandwidth and disk I/O load, we'll kind of throttle that back and make sure that that user isn't going to affect the experience for everybody else. We call it Fair Share when we do it with sessions. Hyper-V has the same kind of functionality built in, so you get the same experience with your virtual machine desktops as well, because Hyper-V is doing that same kind of load balancing on the machine. Okay, so storage options. This is an exciting one, because this is a place where we've got some new features in R2 that we can really take advantage of this. Pick and choose the storage that's right for you. If you've already got a SAN, we can leverage that SAN. You can host your VMs on that SAN and use that for your storage. If you don't have a SAN, you don't want to put in a SAN, you can use locally attached disks. Is anybody running into space in their data center? It's like physical space in the data center is running out? I was doing a customer visit, and I wish I was making this story up. Doing a customer visit, we went into the data center, and they said, this is our data center. And I looked up at the ceiling, and I said, am I seeing what I think I'm seeing hanging from the ceiling? And they said, do you think you're seeing a SAN hanging from the ceiling because we're out of floor space? And I said, yeah. And he said, well, then, yeah, you're seeing what you think you're seeing. They were out of physical space. They were hanging the SAN from the ceiling. That's an extreme example. Anyway, If you got a SAN, fine, we'll use it. If you don't have a SAN, if you want to use a file share with the scale-out file share clustering that we've got in Server 2012, that's a great solution. We also support locally attached disks, and we'll let you mix and match that. With Server 2012, we had we let you control. Put my gold image on. I think I have a better slide. We'll let you kind of mix and match your storage. So you can put, for example, my gold image has most of the read I/O happening on it. So I want to put that gold image on a solid state disk. Now the differencing disks for that gold image, those still need to be fast, but not as fast. So put those on some 15K spinning disks that are still fast, high-end disks that are in a RAID stripe. And then I've got those user profile disks, which really that's just document access for users. Those don't have to be super fast. So we could, again, put that on a different set of storage. And these could all be in the same server, or in this example, in this diagram, we've got them on a scale-out file server. Two things that are really cool in R2 that actually enhance this whole scenario. One of them is online disk dedupe. So what that means is if you've got a storage volume, if you've got a disk with a bunch of personal VMs on it, the majority of that VMs are going to be identical, right? They all have the same operating system installed. They've all got the same applications in them. Most of that data is the same. With online disk dedupe, we just identify which of those are redundant clusters, and we reduce them. We take out those duplicate files. We reclaim the space and just point everything back to the single image. So even if you're doing personal VMs, we can reduce the storage by using online dedupe. The other feature that's cool that's in Server 2012 R2 is tiered storage spaces. So I can create a storage space now with a mix of disks in it. I can put some solid state disks, some physical disks, spinning disks, put them all into a single storage pool, and the operating system will automatically figure out which files are the hottest, which ones are being accessed the most, which blocks are the most accessed in that storage pool, and move them to the faster storage. So all this planning, all this capacity planning and figuring out where to put stuff, I don't have to do that anymore. Just put a bunch of disks in and the operating system, the server will take care of putting the stuff where it needs to be so it accesses it the fastest. Storage is always the biggest bottleneck in VDI. If you guys have looked at doing any capacity planning, like I said, 200 IOPS that log in and boot up and then 20 IOPS per user while they're using the system, when you do that math for 200, 500, 1,000 users, that's a lot of disk IOPS, and trying to figure out where you're going to put those disks and how you're going to optimize them is a lot of work. We've taken a lot of that out with Server 2012 R2 by saying just put all the storage in a pool. We'll make the best use of it. Okay, so how does this all kind of add up? What does this all mean to me? Let's start with, if we start with personal virtual machines, and these are kind of, the bulk of your storage. Storage is the bulk of your cost. SAN is expensive. It's an expensive place to put your storage. If we take advantage of things like this online disk dedupe, we take advantage of something like AppV so we can move the applications out of the operating system, I can reduce that cost. I can reduce that storage. I don't need as much storage now because of online dedupe. I've got that redundancy I can get rid of. By moving all my applications, I can use AppV, move my applications to the shared content store. I can take all the applications out of my gold image. I can reduce costs. If I go to pooled VMs, again, our costs are lower. We've got lower management costs now because now I don't have to manage all of those machines as individual PCs. I just manage that gold image and manage to that gold image and keep that updated. My storage costs, again, go down significantly because I just have one gold image and then a differencing disk for each machine in the pool. It's just a couple of gig. So that goes down. And if I look at sessions, costs go down again as well because management is easier. I don't have to manage gold images. I can just patch the server and it's patched and I'm good. So again, we see even reduced costs with RDS. And that's why when we talk about kind of best value and cost effectiveness, that's why we see sessions being cheaper than VMs. And then, of course, when we have these things like the ability that I don't need to use a SAN, I can use direct attached storage, I can use storage tiering and disk dedupe, I can reduce those storage costs even more. This is where our value really comes in. This is why we've got a great opportunity. We do some great things with density, too. I don't think I have a density slide in this deck. To give you an idea, when you look at sessions versus virtual machines for delivering desktops, We see in testing and in the wild as well, about twice as many users on a session host server than you would doing equivalent VDI images for all those users. So we can save a lot of money just because you need half as many servers if you can do what you need to do using sessions. Okay, so high availability. So this is cool, Adam. You did a deployment to one server. Nobody here is going to deploy just to one server. How do we do things highly available? Lots of options there, again, because we're built on top of Hyper-V. All the high availability stuff that's built into Hyper-V is available to us here. We can use scale-out file clusters. We have a highly available file cluster that all our VMs are sitting on. Up to 8,000 virtual machines in a cluster, up to 64 nodes in the cluster. I did have a density slide, and there's the density slide. We can further increase density with sessions. We can get about twice as many compared to virtual machines. So this is a sample. These are all the services you could potentially have deployed in an RDS deployment or a VDI deployment. The web access gateway that we saw, remote desktop gateway, licensing server, session host, virtualization host, and the connection broker. Before server 2012, all of these were highly available because we could put all of those in a farm or we could put them in an active cluster. But this thing in the middle, this guy in the middle, the broker, was always our single point of failure. We could do an active passive broker, but the broker is really it's the traffic cop. It knows where it needs to direct you for a session. It knows if you already have a session running. It knows if it needs to spawn a new session for you or assign you to a new personal VM. That all happens at the broker. And the broker has a database, and we could do an active passive, but we couldn't do active brokering in the past. With server 2012, we fixed that using SQL clustering. So all of that broker information, now you just set up a highly available SQL server, and you point the brokers at that. From the admin console, there's a high availability wizard that you run for the broker, where all you do is tell it, now I want this broker to be highly available, use the SQL server, give it the connection details for the SQL server, do that for as many brokers as you want. They'll all take advantage of that. We also, because now we're active, you also get performance improvements because we're going to use all the machines that you're using as brokers instead of having just one machine doing all the work and the other one waiting for failover. The scale session tomorrow talks about some of those performance improvements that you can get really in all the locations, but he does talk about the broker. Okay, let's talk about user experience. So what if it's easy to deploy? If the experience sucks, users aren't going to want to use it. There are several places that we made improvements. This was a huge area of investment for us. One of them was in making this a great WAN protocol. RDP was good over the LAN, and there were certainly customers using RDP over the WAN in the past, but I want to tell you, we are ready for the WAN with RDP in Server 2012 and Windows 8. GPU support, which I alluded to a little bit before, the idea that, hey, we have engineering applications that we want to use. Can I take advantage of the GPU? So in Server 2008 R2 SP1, we announced what we called the RemoteFX vGPU, the ability to virtualize a GPU, just like we do with CPUs, and so you can actually share the GPU amongst multiple virtual machines. USB redirection, basically if it's a USB device that works locally, if you install the drivers in the remote session, it works. Scanners, printers, webcams, whatever it is you want to use will work. This works in sessions as well, and we actually do isolate the device to just your session. It used to be if one user plugged in a thumb drive, every user on the session host server could see that thumb drive. Now we limit it just to the user session that actually has the connection to the device. And then seamless experience. I talked a little bit about we support multi-touch, we support multiple screens. We'll talk about, I can do a little bit of a demo of kind of what that experience looks like, making it really feel for a user like a local session would. Okay, so what is a rich user experience? Basically, it's just one that doesn't suck, something that the users will use, right? It's got to be fast, even if they're on a slow connection. I don't want really blurry screens. I want everything to be as clear as it would be if it was running locally. I want you to use the native resolution of my device. Make it fast to reconnect. If I'm on a spotty network, I don't want to sit there for 20 seconds waiting for it to retry for a reconnect. Enabling single sign-on. I shouldn't have to log into the web gateway and then log in again to get into my session. And then remote desktop applications. If we're just delivering applications instead of full desktops, how can we make that experience feel as much like a local application? So let's talk about some of the WAN improvements first, because I think this is one of the most important places that we made changes. We tackle it in a bunch of different ways. How can we make that WAN experience better? One of these is what we call RemoteFX Adaptive Graphics. So in Server 2008 R2, I said we announced RemoteFX vGPU. That was just the first of the RemoteFX improvements. The rest of them came in 2012. One of them is this idea of adaptive graphics. So if you think about a web page, if I'm looking at a web page, there's a lot of different things going on here, right? I've got some text, I've got some images, and in this case, I've also got a flash video playing. Now, with previous versions of the remote desktop protocol, we really just used to screen scrape the whole screen and send the whole screen down. But with starting with Windows 8 and Server 2012, we've gone to this adaptive protocol that really looks at the screen and says, there's a lot of different things going on here. I'm going to encode each of those in their own codec and send them down separately to take advantage of the performance. So for example, with text, we put text in its own codec so that it's always clear. Even on a slow connection, we don't want to send somebody a blurry text. The text is always clear. Images and video we can handle in a couple of ways. One of them is what we call progressive rendering. Do you guys remember surfing the web over dial-up? We brought it back. When you've got a new client, a Windows 7 SP1 machine or a Windows 8 machine as your endpoint, that's constantly dynamically detecting the network conditions and adjusting the experience for the user. One of the things we do is if we determine that it's a pretty slow connection, if there are a lot of graphics on the page, we'll send down a very low resolution version of the graphics. The text always stays clear because we kept that in a separate codec, but then we'll just progressively in the background send updated versions of those graphics until we've got you the most clear one. So users aren't waiting for a page to render. They're not waiting for a page to draw. We'll draw the page. We'll give them good clear text. And we'll just fill in the pictures as we need to. A couple of other things that we do. This was kind of a funny one, but we support the UDP protocol now. So if you think of the TCP protocol, every packet has to be acknowledged or it gets resent, right? If I'm watching a video over a remote desktop session, and I'm dropping some packets, it doesn't really make sense to resend those packets, right? Because by the time they get delivered, I may be 2 or 3 seconds further along in that video. So now we'll detect if UDP is available, we'll just use UDP for that kind of traffic. Some packets get dropped, you don't care, you're a few seconds along in the video, you didn't need those. So we get, that does a couple things. First of all, it just reduces the overall amount of bandwidth that we use, and it gives you a better experience on a low latency connection, or a low speed connection. What else can I tell you? Media streaming, so this is another one. If you take the video example, so let's say I'm sitting at home on my laptop. My laptop is perfectly capable of playing videos off of YouTube. If I'm watching a video on a remote session though, think about what's happening there. I'm watching a video, so that video is being downloaded to the server. The server is decoding it, decompressing it up into a nice high quality video, and then trying to push it down that RDP channel to my desktop machine, which really could have done all of that work itself to decode and decompress the video. So we actually just do that now. If we detect that the endpoint that you're on is capable of decoding MPEG video, we just send the compressed stream. We let the endpoint take care of the decoding. It's seamless to the user. It's still in the same window. Everything's playing back the way it is, but we're letting the endpoint do that rendering and compression and decompression and decoding instead of doing it on the server and then trying to push a big decoded file down. We do it automatically for Windows Media. If you're using some of these other file formats, if you're trying to play QuickTime or Flash or Silverlight, we just transcode that into an H.264 MPEG and push that down to the client, let the client do the decode there, the MPEG file. Device redirection I kind of touched on. We just remote the whole USB bus, so that means pretty much any USB device should just work. We do compress the stream, so it's not going to kill your performance over a slow connection. But if you plug in the device locally, if you as IT have enabled USB devices, they should just work provided the drivers are installed in the VM or the remote machine you're connecting to. And GPU, so this is starting with Windows 8, we will emulate the GPU on the CPU if there's not one present. That way you can still get that arrow experience, you know, the transparent windows and things like that. We'll use the CPU for that if there's no GPU present, and it does a pretty good job. I'll do some demo here in just a second of some video playback and things, and you'll see that it's fine. For most day-to-day work, the software GPU works just fine. But if you do have some AutoCAD or CAD/CAM or some other engineering applications that do take advantage of a GPU and want to take advantage of that processing power, we can make it available. Put GPUs in your server, enable remote FX vGPU, add those GPUs to your virtual machines, and we'll leverage it. You can share multiple, it's really up to the amount of RAM on your GPU, how many virtual machines can share that GPU. A couple features that are new for R2, some of the new improvements that we've made, kind of extending what we did in 2012. Dynamically adding and removing monitors or changing resolution. If I'm in a remote desktop session and I change my local resolution, you used to have to disconnect and reconnect to take advantage of the new resolution on the client. We do that dynamically now. That also works if you're on your tablet, if you're on your Surface device and you do the rotate. We'll now just rotate the session automatically. You're not going to have to disconnect and reconnect to take advantage to get the rotation. Improved remote app. I'll show you what I mean by that in just a minute. Quicker reconnect. So it used to take maybe a minute for a reconnect, particularly on a slow connection, if the connection dropped and the user kind of sat there with this big gray reconnecting screen. In a lot of cases, we've reduced that reconnect to less than 5 seconds. And it's a much less, when you're working in a local application, you kind of get that not responding up on the top while it does something. Outlook does it for me. I don't know if anybody else uses Outlook. It's more like that experience. We'll just kind of give you a not responding, trying to reconnect, much less invasive than a big gray trying to reconnect message. And we're continuing to improve the codecs. So those codecs we're using for sending video, text, graphics down, we're continuing to improve those, better bandwidth, better performance on those things. You want to see some demos, some stuff? Where should we start? Let's start with log in here. So first demo I want to show is some of the remote app improvements that we made. So remember the Excel remote app that I brought up before? Actually using this is not too bad. But there's a couple of things that are a little bit, that give it away that this isn't a local application. One is if I move it around, you see I just get the window outline instead of the full window. And the other thing is when I look down here to peek and get a thumbnail view, I just see this generic Excel icon. So I have an R2 server here that I've also published Excel on. I'm gonna go ahead and fire that version of Excel up and just show you what that change looks like. Okay, here's Excel on my R2 server. So a couple things right away when I drag it. Now we drag the whole window instead of just the outline. And I also get a proper preview in the thumbnail. I can actually see the whole window instead of just the generic icon. Nothing. No, you guys are a tough crowd. Okay, this one, actually, this is the demo that I'm most excited about. And that is when I'm running in full screen mode. So here I've got a full screen video, I'm running a full screen remote session to a server. You can see I can get to this corner and I can get those charms, I can get to this corner and get to my start button. What happens when I change resolution? This is the scariest demo, is what's gonna happen to the projectors when I change resolution. Okay, I just dropped my resolution down now. When I switch back to, keep the changes for just a sec. Now I'm gonna go back to that server we were on, and when I maximize it, we're in scroll bar hell. I gotta come over here and scroll up to here, and then if I want the start button, I gotta scroll back down over here. Same thing happens if I add multiple monitors. I gotta disconnect and reconnect to get my monitors back. Now, here is my R2 machine. Notice when I maximize this window, automatically resized. I can get to the start button. I can get to the charms bar. I'm not in scroll bar hell on R2. Automatically. And it also works when I switch back. Keep those changes, go back to my R2 server. And just a quick flash there as it changes the resolution dynamically. And again, this supports if I add multiple monitors, they pop up right away. If I'm rotating a tablet device, same kind of experience, it comes back very quickly. So that was new to R2. Yep, question. Can you span multiple monitors in a remote session? Yeah, you always could. You can go up to... Detecting two monitors instead of one big one, yeah. Yeah, you have to check the box before you connect that you want to support multiple monitors, and then even if you add more as you go, they come up. What was my next demo? Oh, let's talk about the WAN performance. You said, hey, Adam, so your WAN performance is way better now. Tell me what that looks like. Nobody actually said that but me. That's okay. So I'm going to do a little demo here. I'm just going to bring up a video and do some video playback. This is a web page I built myself. You can tell there's a reason that I'm a marketer and not a web designer. And what I want to do here, I'm just going to start a video playing. Now this is on the LAN. So I come over here to network connector. And you can see, by the way, so what I've got here is we've got a Windows 7 machine on the left and a Windows 8 machine on the right. And you can see they both look like they're playing pretty well. If I look at my network usage, it's kind of spiking upwards as high as about 7 meg to play both of these. What I want to do is just pause the Windows 7 one briefly so that just Windows 8 is playing. And you see that drop. In this case, it dropped. We normally see almost a 90% reduction in the bandwidth on the LAN. This isn't a very high connection anyway, and we're actually caching ahead because it's a Windows media file. But we can see some of that performance. We see a drop in bandwidth utilization even on the LAN. But where it really gets impressive is on the WAN. Now, did this one stop playing? Why did this stop updating? There we go. So where it really gets interesting is when we get onto the WAN. What I've got here is a WAN emulator. Now, when I hit this play button right here, we're going to throttle that WAN connection down to a 2.5 meg connection for each of these remote sessions. That's like a 3G connection almost, right? A very slow connection. It's also got 100 milliseconds of latency, which is like a New York to California type of latency. I just hit play on this. That emulator just kicked in. So a couple of things just happened. The Windows 8 session paused for just a second, realized that the network conditions had changed, and then just picked up where it left off. Now you can see the Windows 7 one is having a hard time. Our bunny on this side looks like he had a big night on Bourbon Street. He's really struggling to get moving here. He's moving really slowly on this 2.5 meg network connection. And as soon as I hit stop on this, you see him catch up as it goes and grabs the packets that it was missing. And part of that is because it's doing pure TCP traffic all the way through, so it's got this slow link, and every time a packet doesn't get through, it has to wait, and it keeps resending it. Whereas the Windows 8 one is using that UDP traffic and just pushing things and not caring about dropped packets. What else was I going to say on that demo? I think that was it. All right, let's stop that for a second. Oh, I know what I was going to say. We have this great performance in Windows 8. We made it available on Windows 7. There's a Windows update package for Windows 7. Download the RDP update. There's also a group policy setting that you change. You get that same performance on RDP on Windows 7 now. So you don't have to update. I'm going to do one other. I'll switch to one other demo, and then we can do some Q&A for the last 10 minutes or so. And what I want to show is the vGPU performance. So what I'm going to get here is I've got an application that it's kind of a fake engineering application. Basically, what it's going to do is simulate falling water. So it's going to put a bunch of pixels on the screen and just simulate gravity on water and letting those pixels kind of fall as if they were water. So I'm going to fire this up. So in this case, now this machine on the left, it's got a vGPU installed. The machine on the right does not. It's using that synthetic CPU-based GPU to run this DirectX application. And what I want to show you is the performance difference. These are both running on the same machine. They're both running on this laptop. Just one of them has the GPU added to it. This feels like a part I should have done ahead of time, huh? Was launch the app and get all the shading done. Takes it just a second. Only problem is when I got this, I feel like I have to fill this dead space, and so I tell everybody the story of what they're going to see, and then it's not a surprise when it happens. Okay, so you can see with GPU, without GPU, at the top of the screen, you can see frame rate. We're getting maybe 24 frames per second on just the CPU. With the GPU, we're seeing 60 frames per second. And you can just see the performance is better, right? You can see how much smoother, how much faster this one is processing and moving pixels around compared to this one because it's taking advantage of the GPU. For day-to-day use, for Office, Word, browsing the internet, the CPU is probably fine, but if you've got some engineering-type applications that would take advantage of a GPU, put GPUs in the server and take advantage of those. Okay. Oh, I was going to say, I think I'm out of demos, but no, I do have one more I want to show. Go back to the VDI server, and I just want to flip back to... just want to show some things we can do with a session here. So you can see I've got two sessions running here. And there's not much I can do. I can log a user off. That's about all I can do to an active session. Here's an active session. I can send a message or I can log it off. This is on a 2012 server. That's about all we could do with a session. If I switch back to my R2 server and look at the session here, notice I've got a session here with Adam. I have this other option. Shadow is now available. So I have a couple of options. Do I want to view and just see what they're seeing? Do I want to control it? I have this thing to prompt for user consent. We'll turn that off so we can just watch what the user is doing. Now, in this case, I've got group policy enabled, so I have to let the user know. So let's try that again. And we'll go ahead and prompt the user. And you'll see here, if I switch back, so again, the session that I'm connecting to and shadowing is actually that Excel remote app that I had. So if I say yes, what I see here is a window open up with just a black screen. Why is it a black screen? Because Excel is minimized. That's the wrong Excel. If I open it up here, you can see now. So this is my server session over here, and I can see what the user is doing right from there. So, and we also have the opportunity to take control. This is actually built into the MSTSC client, so you don't necessarily have to launch it from the admin console. You can actually just run MSTSC with a slash shadow command and specify the ID of the session you want to connect to and connect to it right like that as well. So session is back. That was a big ask, and I'll own up to not having it in 2012, but it's back for R2. Okay, what else can I cover off here in just the last couple of minutes? We'll just summarize. So efficient management, lots of ways we do that. Great new deployment wizard, single console to do everything in. Best value, user profile disks, storage on Hyper-V, and rich user experience, improved WAN performance and things like that. And yeah, please, for more information, go see these things. Please fill out your eval forms. Let me know how I'm doing. I do like, but the best part for me of coming to conferences is talking to users and finding out what people are doing in real life and finding out what we need to do better for you guys. But they'll only let me keep coming to these conferences if I'm turning in good scores. So please, if it was a bad score, you can still tell me because I want to know that too. But it is important that I get your feedback. And some other stuff. Please enter your emails. Okay. We've got about 5 minutes left. If you guys have questions, we've got some microphones here in the aisle. It's preferable that you use the microphone so that you get picked up for the recording and we know about it. But I'm happy to open up to Q&A. Don't everybody go at once. So for the user VHD, how hard is it to get access to it? really, really easy. I can show you. It literally is just a VHD file sitting on the server. If I go back to that server and I open, I don't know if I can open it right now because it's probably in use. But here it is. You do have to know that, I mean, it creates a GUID associated with the user. I don't know if I can mount it right now or not. I can. I can mount it and see the files. Pretty easy. Any other questions? Kind of in the back, in the middle.
Can you show the remote app sign-in?
Can I show the remote app sign-in? Yeah, there's a couple of ways you can get to remote apps. The way I showed it was just from the web console. So you just go to server name /rdweb. This page is created for you automatically. I'm just logging in as a user. And this is everything that's been published for me. And this is actually an XML feed. One thing I didn't show, I always run out of time. Which is too bad. You guys are going to get to see something. This is what you get for staying late. Everybody else left early. They missed this. Is this the one I installed? I installed the remote. All right. Well, there is a great Windows Store app. There is a great new modern application as well. If you search for remote desktop in the store, it was at one point the most popular productivity app, you know, because there are only like three in the store. We do have a good modern UI for remote desktop as well. You can actually subscribe by email. So you start up the new modern app, and you just have to put in your email address, kind of like Outlook does the auto-configure by just from your email address. We can do the same thing and publish to the modern app all of the users. Desktops and applications that have been available to you. We integrated in the start menu on Windows 8, so you don't have to launch something else. It's all in one place. People are excited about that. Awesome. Question here.
Speaking of modern apps, any plans or any release for the remote desktop connection tool for Mac OS?
You know, there are three questions that I always get, and I should just answer them at the beginning of the session. I should. I know. So the question was, hey, the Mac OS client, what's the story there? And I'm going to jump to my appendix because the related question I always get is, do I still need Citrix? Which is the slide I'm trying to get to. Really? How many of these slides do they put in? Okay. So what, you know, when do I still need Citrix? There, when people ask me, why do I still need Citrix, there are really three scenarios that I suggest to them. One is if you have non-Windows clients. We make great clients for Windows. We don't make Mac, Android, iOS clients. Citrix does that. There are others available, but Citrix gives you a nice one-stop shop for all of those. Citrix also supports multiple operating system versions. We support Windows Server 2012, Windows 8, and Windows 7 SP1. That's all we support. If you want to deliver XP virtual machines, or if you still have 2003 terminal servers that you're still using, we don't manage those from the same interface. You're back to managing them the way that you used to manage them. Where Citrix gives you it all in one place. They also do some more robust management. If you've got a very large deployment and you're in multiple geographies and you want a single view of all of your stuff, the Citrix admin tools give you that. They also do delegation of roles. So you want to give your help desk people rights to do session shadowing, but not rights to create new virtual machine collections. Citrix enables some of that. That was a really long way around the answer of, are we going to update the Mac client? And the answer right now is we license the RDP protocol. We make it available to third parties. There's other companies out there making them. But we do have a client. It's an old client. I think it only supports like system 10.7 or older or something like that. It works on everything. Do you know what it doesn't support, though, is the remote desktop gateway. And it doesn't do remote app. And USB, yeah. I know, our Mac client is lacking. We look to third parties for that. I'm gonna go here and then here. Question. So in Active Directory, you're seeing this tab and all this remote desktop and virtual desktop stuff. You're asking what it does? Nothing. It's deprecated. That's 2008 R2 artifacts. We don't use it anymore in 2012. If there are people that are still using that, though, let me know. What did it do? Well, it was supposed to kind of give you all of this. Come talk to me afterwards. Let's figure out what it was supposed to do. Okay, there was a question over here, right? Is there an easier way to steal the RDP file?
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Is there an easier way to steal the RDP file? Access the page from a browser that's not IE, access it from Chrome, and it'll just download the RDP file. That's one thing I didn't show. Yeah, we are cross-platform. We used to have a dependency on IE. It's still, again, it's just downloading an RDP file that it's going to launch in your terminal, in your RDP client. But we do support multiple. I usually do a demo with my iPad, and I bring up this page on an iPad, and then it launches the ITAP mobile RDP client from there. But anyway, does that answer your question? Okay. Any others? Up here. Yep. Is there any way to make remote app installers in 2012? Because that was so much better in 2008 where you could create an MSI and everything, huh? Yeah, no, there's not. You can access a remote app. You can access them directly from the XML feed. You can also set up, you can change file extensions. There is by a group policy, you can associate file extensions with a remote app. So you can just click on an XLS and have it launch Excel in a remote app. Here. Yeah, so I said there's three questions I always get. The first one is, do you doing a Mac client? The second is, do I still need Citrix? And the third question is, will you explain the licensing to me? We're out of time. Thank you all very much. There aren't any plans to add client operating systems to SPLA. That being said, okay, go ahead. Yep. Yeah, the vGPU is only supported on client operating systems. Yeah, so there was kind of a long question around, and if you're not a hoster, it's less important to you, but it's how can we license VDI in a hosting environment? There's no kind of hoster licensing, SPA licensing for client operating systems, so those don't work. We say use the server operating system, and you say, okay, cool, but yeah, server operating system doesn't support the vGPU today. I don't have good answers for you. I don't have anything I can announce. Yep. Yeah, so we have a license program for the RDP protocol. The question was about all these RDP 8.1 enhancements on non-Windows clients. We have a licensing program for the protocol. And we make that available and allow people to adopt it. So I know ITAP is the one I always talk about. ITAP Mobile or the Pocket Cloud stuff from Wise, they're all working on 8.1 enabled clients for non-Windows devices. Okay, I'm going to stick around for just a little bit while I pack up. If people have other questions, you're welcome to come and talk to me. I'll also be at the VDI booth in the expo hall in the people-centric IT section on and off all week.